Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim Potts and Jamal Potts back on the air. We got a little technical glitch going on with Jamal's phone. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. We got Zayla that's on live today as well, so he's going to be giving us some updates. But as always, we thank you for joining us on your Sunday afternoon or your evening. And we always appreciate that wherever you are. Okay, so to get ourselves rolling here, we're going to be talking about, Zayla's going to be talking about giving us an update in Minnesota. We're also going to be talking about the human zoos, if you can believe that, actual human zoos. And then we're going to be talking about mass shootings. So remember when we normally talk about mass shootings, I don't want people to think that we've gotten away from some of that because we have not gotten away from that. And you're actually going to be pretty amazed at the numbers for this year that we really don't hear about on the news. So we're going to be doing that as well. In addition to that, we're going to be doing, the etiquette, the virtues going back in time. Because as I told you last week, that's always going to be a part of the show now, where every week we're going to give some little tidbit, you know, to draw us back into focus with some of this etiquette in the home, outside of the home, wherever it may come from. So hopefully that'll get people back on track with a lot of different things these days, because everything seems like it's in such upheaval. But before I forget, I'm going to hold something up to the screen. Anybody that wants to call in, I'm going to hold up the phone number for you so you would be able to see that. So you'll be able to call in. There's the ID number. So I'm going to take a moment so you can write the number down. That's the number and the password. And you can always go to Facebook on LA Talk Radio, because this is streaming live on Facebook at this point. Okay, so if you want to call in, there it is. And by the way, before I forget, if you want to get on our blogs for the email blast about upcoming show topics, just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. And then you'll be getting the blog information and the blast. All right. Let's see. The other thing I want to do is send out a sympathy, so to speak, to the family of John Lewis, who passed away. John Lewis was a pioneer in terms of the civil rights movement. And he's been a stalwart type of guy, you know, politically speaking, for a lot of years. I think he's been in office over 40 years. He died from pancreatic cancer. And he's done a lot for the civil rights movement in this country. He marched with Dr. Martin Luther King. And he passed away a couple of days ago. And that's why you'll see the flags half-mast. Zeller, I don't know if you want to say anything about that. I'm sure you're very familiar with who he was as well. But at any rate, his passing will be, he'll be surely missed with his passing, for sure. Okay, the first thing I want to do is talk about the emails. And after the emails, then we're going to have Zeller that will give us an update about what's going on in Minneapolis, because Minneapolis appears to be having their issues for sure. But the virtue part and the etiquette part I'll do first, actually. So etiquette, this is for table manners. This goes back in time, everybody. And I don't know about you, but I can tell you that in my mother's household, it was clearly some of these things were entrenched in us. Let's put it that way. So the first one that I want to mention is table manners. All ladies should be served first, including those of the household. So ladies always get served first. And the second one I found a little bit, I don't know, surprising of sorts, because I know that I'm guilty of this, but it seems to be so trivial. But when you're eating bread, you're supposed to break off your bread. You're not supposed to bite your bread. For whatever sense that makes. Okay, but I know what they're saying. They're saying break off a piece of the bread, then do whatever you do, and then put it in your mouth. So you don't bite into, you know, the piece of bread. And I know when I was coming up, we always had bread along with our meals. So at any rate, you're supposed to break off your bread. So if you had a restaurant or whatever, you're not supposed to pick up the whole piece of bread and bite into it. You're supposed to break off a piece and then put it in your mouth, if you can believe that. But that's etiquette. That's table manners. The last one that I'm going to give here is lessons in conversation. And every week, I'm going to do one of lessons in conversation because some of these things I'm kind of guilty of myself, quite frankly. But on the other side of the coin, the way that we have to look at this, about being rude when we're in conversations with people. But this one has to do with, do not become a distributor of small talk in the community. So what does that mean, guys? Don't engage in rumors. And I would also pass that message on to people in the work environment, because I can tell you that from a business perspective, and Zayla, who has worked with us over the years, can also tell you that that's one of the calls we get, because it creates a lot of nonsense in the work environment because people are spreading rumors about everybody. And those things can actually lead to litigation as well, because then they want to say they're working in a hostile work environment as well. So is what we want to be able to do is refrain. And if you're in management, by the way, remember, you have to set the tone. You know, you cannot be the one. Okay. All right. So with that in mind, let's turn to these emails and see what we got going on here. All right, Jim, I'm in Portland, an African-American. I am outraged that protests have now impacted the black community and black businesses. It is so frustrating, and the local politicians are doing nothing about it. I'm really just venting. We enjoy your show, and the insights you can give would be great. Thanks, Johnny and Mary, Portland, Oregon. Well, look, it's true. I actually did some research on that, and is what they're talking about here is that some of these protesters have barricaded doors. Now, we got to separate out this. And Zayla, even where you are, I'm sure is what we have are people who are doing peaceful protests, and then we have the people that are doing violent protests. And the people doing violent protests aren't necessarily people from the community. These are people coming in. So, you know, Zayla, have you found that to be true in Minneapolis?
Absolutely. And it actually dovetails with am I muted? No. Dovetails with what with John Lewis. I mean, think about him and his history. I think when I looked up and researched it, he had been arrested 45 times over his lifetime. And, you know, were those peaceful protests that he was involved in? Yes, he was. Well, he was one of those peaceful protesters. And there are folks that get violent during some of these things, but I think it's important to be able to separate out the two, just like you've outlined.
But you know what? I think there's a difference between the people that were protesting peacefully back in those days with those marches. Now we have the same. We have people doing peaceful, the peaceful protesters. But now we have these other groups that are infiltrating the event. Okay. And because they are people that are, you know, some people say that they're anarchists, I guess, and that they're slipping in, and they're the ones that are creating some of this, you know, some of this bad, you know, bad vibe, so to speak, and the destruction. So it's not necessarily people from the community. Now, along those lines, this is what we're talking about, because like I said, I did my research on this, and this one person is saying that, you know, they turned around and barricaded the doors to a police precinct a half a block from Martin Luther King Boulevard and set fire to the building. Well, that building also housed black-owned businesses, including an Ethiopian restaurant and a barber school. So they're also saying that some of these people that are doing this are not black. They are in fact are white, you know, so it's really strange about what's going on. And this change about what's going on up there, because they've been in protest now for 52 straight days.
Yep.
All right. And is what this person is frustrated about is the fact that the local politicians aren't really doing anything about it, which is what they're saying. Now, we don't know the behind the scenes, you know, about what the politicians are doing about it. But clearly, this is being, you know, something that's not being taken off. And what I also read was some quotes of some people saying this is not the Black Lives Matter movement that's doing this. But they're getting the hard knock for it, you know, as if it is. So I think from my perspective, and what I'm able to see is that you've got individuals kind of working under the radar. They're claiming that's what they are. They're part of that movement when they're not part of that movement, and they're creating destruction.
I mean, one of the difficult parts is that, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement is intentionally decentralized. So, yes, you have the three, you know, black women who are the founders of the organization, but you know, the power is very decentralized on a localized level. So the local Black Lives Matter organizations do and focus on what they feel is important for their local communities, as opposed to there being some national organization where there's this national voice in regards to what to focus on. So that's always something
Well, you know what? I actually did a little research on that. They've got 19 chapters across the country. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they're all decentralized. So all of those other chapters are all just people running those chapters saying that they are the Black Lives Matter movement. And that's even when I talk about, and Zayla, you've heard me talk about domestic terrorism before. The problem with some of these groups are that they don't have, per se, a structured leadership group, okay, so to speak, that's dictating to them to say, okay, don't do this, and it's okay to do that. You got people that are just like the Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's part of the problem when you have these different types of groups. So even though Black Lives Matter may have started out with the proper principles in mind, you have other people that turn around and sour that by doing other things that was not part of the intended purpose. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yeah, but I think that can happen in any organization too. But one thing I wanted to make sure that I highlighted is the fact that, you know, the Black Lives Matter organization here in the Twin Cities isn't the one that's really, you know, managing and focusing the efforts here. It's been the Black Voices Collective for, you know, for a long period of time that's actually been locally focused in regards to all of these types of efforts. It's almost as if, you know, in essence, our Black Lives Matter local chapter is defunct. You know, there's no connection there really with the national organization, at least from what I've been told through the research that I've done in regards to it.
Hmm. Well, again, you know, I can understand the person's frustration because the problem that they're being faced with, quite frankly, even with that zone up in Seattle, was that the businesses were being hurt because they had to shut down the businesses, and people are being hurt by some of these people without a doubt. I mean, some of these businesses may never recover. So at any rate, so Johnny and Mary, look, we understand, you know, your frustrations, and you ask, you know, basically, you know, any insights that we can give. Well, I mean, I would suggest you gotta march down into the politicians and bang on the door, so to speak, to get them to react to these things, you know, and sometimes that's not being done. I know in Minneapolis, I think they were after the politicians to do the right thing. Is that right, Zayla?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people are always going to hold the elected leaders accountable for what within the city, you know.
I think that's all across the board. Local. Okay. So, yeah, you blanked out for a second. Are you still there?
Yep. I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Again, that's at all levels, you know, right up to the presidency, quite frankly, and beyond, so to speak. When people don't like things that are going on, but that's the job that they have. They're the politicians. They're going to catch the heat, and that's just how it works. So Johnny and Mary, look, the best insight that I think that we can give you, including Zayla, actually, is that you gotta knock on the door of those politicians there and get them to do things about this. I know that the federal government was talking about jumping into this and, you know, at one point in Seattle, but they got it worked out. I don't know at some point that the federal government doesn't do something. We'll just have to wait and see. Okay, second email. Jim, you have shown, your show on values was great. It certainly brings back some parenting memories. I agree. Some of the bases have been lost. I love the fact that each week you'll be giving reminders and looking forward to Sundays. Thanks a lot, Bernard from Jacksonville, Florida. Well, Bernard, I appreciate that. And again, I came up with the idea because, to be honest with you, I came across that book that was in my grandmother's collection, so to speak, when we went to her house to kind of get things out of there, get things sorted out. We found that one in Virginia. And I love this book, quite frankly. All right. Third one. Jim, I live in New York City. Our mayor. Hold on a second. Yeah, I live in New York City. Our mayor got rid of the anti-crime unit. And now, just as you have been saying, crime is up. Shootings are up. We live in fear in our neighborhoods. And we have. Let's see. And we think our mayor does not care. Please stay on message not to defund or dismantle the police departments. Peter, New York City. Well, first of all, Mayor de Blasio is on his last term, as I understand it. So he's basically doing whatever he wants to do. And that's really what it boils down to. So if his convictions are such that he feels, you know, that the anti-crime unit is not in the best interest of the city, he really can't be stopped at this time, I don't think. But now, from what I understand, they have been clamoring from the neighborhoods, because, again, I did some research on that based upon what you have. And the Brooklyn borough president, Eric Adams, is calling on the New York Police Department to reinstate its recently shuttered anti-crime unit. And I see we got a visual from Jamal. Jamal, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome to the show, Jamal. I heard you had some technical problems going on, brother.
Yeah, man, I finally figured it out, man. I ain't gonna let nobody shut me out of this.
Well, Jamal, let me finish on this email, because I know you also had a blast. We normally do the blast at the beginning, and I know that you had that you wanted to put somebody on blast.
Oh, so got you.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. So right now we are talking about the third email, Jamal, and they're talking about the New York City with the anti-crime unit. So as I was saying, the Brooklyn Borough President, Eric Adams, he is calling for NYPD to reinstate the anti-crime unit because they're struggling with this gun violence. Now, you guys may have heard on the news where this one-year-old got shot and killed. So, I mean, so their family, and this is, of course, in a minority situation, the black or African-American got shot in the stomach during a family cookout. So, you know, this business about, again, I don't want to get into a deep discussion about whether we're defunding or whether or not we're dismantling or whatever the case may be. I'm sticking straight to this particular situation because of defunding by de Blasio, where they got rid of the anti-crime unit, and now there's been an escalation in the shootings. Now, the NYPD anti-crime unit was shut down in mid-June among the protests, you know, sparked by George Floyd. They have 600 plainclothes officers were being reassigned to other divisions as a result of that. That's 600 officers off the street, okay, regarding the anti-crime unit. And that's a lot, you know, even in a jurisdiction like New York City. So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not they reinstate it. Zayla, what do you think? Because I know that you've been outspoken, and I'm not saying about, you know, defunding versus, you know, you understand where I'm going with that. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, one of my questions for you is, you know, there's always this cause and effect aspect of it. And I know that it's easy to point to, you know, de Blasio defunding this particular thingy and stuff. But I mean, my question is, you know, everything else isn't constant. So, you know, my research has been, what, over 1,000 shootings across the country over the last, let's say, month, 2 months. And that's an increase over last year. But one thing that we didn't have last year was COVID and these millions and millions of people being unemployed. So I know that you do, you know, lots of research in regards to this area, but when there's higher levels of unemployment, at least to the extent that we have now, isn't there always an increase in regards to crime and violence? I mean, because this isn't anything that's specific to New York. It's happening here in Minneapolis. It's happening in cities all across the country. So, you know,
just to be clear, mm-hmm. They defunded this in June. This is July. We're talking 1 month the way it's escalated. And remember, over the last 3 to 4 weeks, New York City does not have a COVID issue per se. They're mm-hmm. almost down to zero. Okay.
Correct.
So, is it
fair to not include the fact that COVID, the fact that people are unemployed, the millions and millions and what, 10, 20, 30 million people are unemployed, that doesn't have a factor in regards to any of this?
Well, I don't think 30 million people are unemployed. I mean, the numbers actually are a lot lower than that. You know, people are getting back to work. The doors are open. And again, I don't want to talk about across the country. This person is writing in about New York City. So in New York City, okay, they are, you know, their COVID situation is a lot lower. People are back to work. So if we narrow it down just to that particular circumstance, if you're asking my personal opinion, it looks to me as if look, you guys know that I have a law enforcement background. Criminals are going to do what criminals do. You take the police off the street. We're not talking about the decent people around. These people had a barbecue. Okay, they were at a barbecue, and this kid caught a you know, poor kid caught a bullet in his stomach. Okay. So, you know, criminals are going to do what criminals do. If there's no cops around, they're going to do what they're going to do. It's like being on a freeway. You're speeding along until when? A police car, a highway patrolman passes by. What's everybody do? Slow down. Okay. I mean, if you just look at the basics from that standpoint, that's just what happens with people when police officers are around. No. Have I done a research on the whole country to know, you know, because of COVID-19 and, you know, people are out of work, so they're stealing more, shooting more, whatever the case may be? Zeller, if you're ever out of work, are you going to do that? The answer is no. Okay. If I'm out of work, I'm not going to be stealing and doing those kind of things because I'm out of work. So it goes back to the virtue thing. Jamal, what do you think?
That's what I was going to ask, because I'm just wondering what the flex is on the numbers. Has the crime rate gone up? Has it gone down since the funding? Because if you said New York City, I think New York City's been known to be a high crime area to begin with for an awful long time anyway, whether the police was there or not. Would the police have deterred this incident? You know what I mean? So I think it's kind of not necessarily fair to say, because the police have been, you know, reduced, that this happened as a result of that. You know, it's already been a high crime area. So, well, you know, and it always takes a while to see how numbers really work out anyway, not just over a matter of a couple weeks.
Well, to answer Zayla's question, Philly shooting surged as 23 people were shot in a single day. So as an example, all right, so far this year, at least 888 people, as an example, have been shot, okay, in Philadelphia, PA, according to the analysis by the city. So they're averaging 4.7 people a day. The number of shooting victims has been steadily increasing, actually, since 2014. In 2014, 1,047 people were shot in that whole year. So far this year, it's been almost 900 people. So look, I don't have a crystal ball with some of this stuff, guys. All I know is that, fundamentally speaking, all right, when law enforcement's not around, criminals will act. That's just who they are. Okay, I think Zella's bringing up a good point about COVID-19. If COVID has people that are out of work, you know, desperate people will do desperate things. I don't deny that. Okay, but to me, that doesn't mean, you know, killing. Okay, as opposed to people that are robbing or people doing this or doing that. I'm never going to justify it at all. But look, Zella, while you were here today for a reason as well, because I was going to ask you your opinion that the federal government has denied a request for the state of Minnesota for disaster declaration, asking for financial support to help clean up and repair the fire damage from the unrest following the police killing of George Floyd. Are you familiar with the fact that the city has asked for that money and the fact that they've been denied?
I know that our governor, Tim Walz, submitted the request on behalf of the state of Minnesota and for the Trump administration to declare a major disaster for the state of Minnesota, which would allow for the ability to try to request and secure some of these funds. There's currently been a request for $500 million help in regard to the damage that's happened after the whole George Floyd murder and subsequent riots and unrest. Much of that money will go towards small businesses, grocery stores, pharmacies, you know, post offices that I know that were damaged or destroyed during the aftermath. And one of the interesting things is, you know, based on the numbers, the Twin Cities uprising after George Floyd's murder was the second most devastating in U.S. history in regard to the unrest compared to the 1992 riots in Los Angeles. So one of the things that I did was, you know, did some research in regards to, well, what happened after the LA riots, right? And found that happened under President Bush. And so 1 month after those riots, you know, there was financial aid that was promised by the federal government. And within a month, that aid started getting there to help jobs, homes, businesses. Some of the agencies that were involved in that were the Department of Justice, the FEMA, the Small Business Administration, the Department of Agriculture. They had, at least within a month after, there were 15 million applications that were submitted in regards to some help. So it's just interesting that, you know, the other one that happened was under also a Republican administration. So the question is, you know, why is it being denied here when the last time we had a significant uprising like this, the funds were provided? And that was $638 million in aid that was provided by the federal government.
Well, for one thing, I look at the city. From what I understand what you're saying about the state. The majority of this money is probably going to go towards, you know, Minneapolis because they had the hard hit. You know, this happened in your city or, you know, the city of Minneapolis as a result of behavior by a law enforcement officer in your city. I personally look at this as a city issue. Okay. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, the sad part about this is if they don't get the money, it's going to fall to the taxpayers. Now that's going to be the sad part because that money is going to come from somewhere to, you know, to redo it. And the businesses that are going to actually go under if they can't get some kind of financial help. So I understand where you're coming from. Jamal, what do you think about the money? I mean, should the federal government, you know, help them out?
Yeah, I do. I think the federal government should. After all, they're supposed to be the ones that watch over us. You know what I mean? To take care of the citizens also. I understand that there's different policies, whether it be state and local and federal and things like that. But at the same time, they're American citizens, businesses that need help. And we should do something to help. If you don't, there's going to be some type of backlash. You know, it's not going to be good for the citizens of that town. So, yes, I think the government should step in. There's a time to do everything. And that's one of those times to step in.
One of the things I want to make sure that I added, Jim, you said that this was all the result of one police officer's interaction with a crime suspect. I mean, the LA riots, they just didn't happen out of nowhere. It was the result of the verdict after the Rodney King riot, you know, situation, which was, again, a police officer's interaction with somebody. So Well, first of all,
let's back up then. If you're going to get that deep, let me just tell you, okay, because I don't know where you were living at the time, but Jamal and I were living right in the heart of, you were down behind the orange curtains, Alan. You were down in Orange County.
No, I was in Ventura.
Oh, you were in Ventura. Now, you know what happened with Reginald Denny. You know, Reginald Denny is the one to spark that. Now, I understand about the police department, okay, and what they did, and they paid that price, okay? But the riot got sparked, okay, when Reginald Denny, okay, was driving down the street, okay, and he was driving in a low income area, okay, South Central LA. He rolls down the window and he turns around and gives the finger, okay, to a crowd of protesters, okay, and says basically, you know, Rodney King, and, you know, he got what he had coming or something like that.
Right.
And that's when the people got mad because he did that. Okay. And the problem was, is that he was a truck driver. He was on a truck. Mm-hmm. And he got caught at the red light. And when he got caught at the red light, okay, and they beat him, that's really was the catalyst at that point that sparked that whole thing. So
really it wasn't the verdict from the Rodney King riot.
As what I'm saying is that I just got through telling you there were protesters out there.
But yeah, people were not protesting. They were protesting.
But it's what sparked the riot itself. The protest. Look, here we go. Protest was one thing. The riot started, okay, when Reginald Denny did that, and people started fighting, and they got mad about it, and it was being televised. That's what happened. Jamal, you tell me, Jamal, you were there.
No. I remember that because we was actually getting a haircut on the floor of the living room, and we saw that, you know, that whole situation unfold. It was just people out there. Now, there was some looting going on, like on Florence and Normandy in that area, but in terms of it turning violent like that, yeah, that's when that part started. But I want to go back to what Zayla was saying earlier and the comment that was made. I'm not sure who made the comment about, you know, everything happened with just Chauvin by one man. Well, I disagree with that because if somebody in the top of that police department had took care of somebody that had 18 complaints, 18 plus complaints, George Floyd would still be alive. And I think that's the kind of the problem with some of the departments, not all, is that they're not taking enough action. You know, I never worked a job where I could have 18 complaints and still keep my job. It just hasn't happened. You know what I mean? So if somebody, and if you allow, as we know, and even in unemployment, if you establish a pattern of allowing certain behaviors to continue, these kind of problems are going to arise. And it won't be just him. It'll be multiple officers who do things like this and just haven't been caught. So I don't blame just Derek Chauvin. I blame the people at the top for allowing that man to still work there after 18 complaints.
And you know what? And I agree with that. I mean, we've talked about it off the air. Zeller, you know, the police department there, somebody in the administration failed to do their job. Because I can tell you, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, that stuff doesn't happen like that. They're very much on top of this stuff. So to me, I don't know what it was about him. Yeah, I mean, he got 18 complaints, 19 complaints. But and then let me just tell you guys something. When they say 18 or 19 complaints, I have yet to see what those complaints were about. Because I will tell you that, Pete, we call it being beefed, okay? You will call it a complaint. But citizens will beef somebody. Like, I turned around one day and gave a ticket, okay, to a guy that ran a stop sign. Pull him over. He's in the car driving, and he's got his wife there. The wife is the one doing all the talking. The wife is saying, oh, he's a doctor, and he's on the way to an emergency. Now, they were dressed, I don't want to say he was in a tuxedo or she was in a formal gown, okay, but they were dressed to go out, no doubt about it. So I turned around and I gave him a ticket for running the stop sign. 15 minutes later, I get a call to come back to the station. I go back to the station and there's the watch commander saying, hey, you know, we got, you know, these people came in and they, you know, they complained that you had a John Wayne complex. Okay. And that, you know, you wrote them a ticket and blah, 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 blah. I said, they came in here. They said, yeah, 15 minutes ago. Well, what happened to the emergency medical thing that he was going to? You follow what I'm saying? They weren't right. Going anywhere. And the guy, by the time they got to the station, he was the one now doing all the talking because his wife was probably chomping in his ear about why he didn't say anything. But that goes down in your jacket as a complaint. You follow what I'm saying? Technically. Now, the watch commander told me, hey, look, Potts, we've never had a complaint on you. So, I mean, if you say this is what happened, that's what happened. End of story. But that doesn't stop a notation being made. It's just that it's right. Been resolved in your favor. So when they say 18 or 19 complaints, Jamal, I am sure this is just my opinion. We haven't seen this yet. But what were those 18 or 19 complaints? Did he kill 18 people? Did he put his knee on the neck of 18 people? When it will come out is when this goes to court.
That's what's always amazing. We haven't heard about exactly what the complaints were, but after George Floyd was killed, we found out everything about him. We found out about his criminal record. We found out about, he was intoxicated at the time. He had a fake $20 bill. All that information came out.
Well, we've got Mr. Stout on the line. You could ask Mr. Stout, you know, why is that? Why is that the case? I don't know. I don't live there. Zeller?
Why the information was available and dug up on George Floyd and not in regard to the officer? Well, some information is public record and some information is not. So, I haven't looked through all of or dug up all of the complaints. I do believe that there's at least one or two of those complaints which with excessive force. And that's been one of the issues. And actually, one of those may date back to when Amy Klobuchar was our district attorney locally, and so that I think there's that it dates back to that one of the complaints, and so that's part of the push for her to withdraw her vying to get the VP nomination was that there's additional complications as it relates to that because there had been some organizations locally that had been fighting and pushing against her in regards to that. But one quick thing I want to make sure that I add in regards to not only the riots that happened here in Minneapolis, but the riots that happened in Los Angeles, we have to remember that none of that kind of stuff happened in a vacuum. These weren't just one incident that resulted in this. It was a culmination of unrest and unjust treatment over a long period of time, which resulted in the boiling over point there. There had been many issues and situations that happened in Los Angeles prior to the Rodney King verdict. That resulted in things kind of exploding at the time, including the Korean store owner that killed a black girl. I know you remember
Latasha Harlan.
Right, right. And so here in Minnesota, I mean, we had, you know, Philando Castile that got killed. We had the officer that killed the Australian woman, Justine, and that he got convicted of his charge, and that, you know, she got, you know, her family got hundreds of millions of dollars in regards to settlement, and yet Philando Castile's family didn't get as much, you know. So there was
both and John.
Right. There's all these culminations of issues. So it's not just anything in isolation. It's always, you have to think about the context with what built up to it.
Well, you know, also, okay, go ahead, Jamal.
Can I ask you as a law enforcement too, man, because I don't want to forget Breonna Taylor. Yep. You know what I mean? Because that was a very big thing. Breonna Taylor was the one at home with her husband, I believe it was her husband, and the police came in the wrong house unannounced. And the husband returned, started shooting at somebody he didn't know who was in the house, and they shot her and killed her. Now they executed a search warrant on the wrong house. So, and this woman died as a result. So what is the penalty? Because people are very upset about that.
When you say what is the penalty, Jamal, listen, I responded one time to a call. Okay. And it was a house in the front, and it was a house sounded like down this road. There was another house. I get a call that an alarm, a burglar alarm is going off. I respond to the call. I go to the house. That's the front house. There's nothing happening there. I don't see anything. So I go down this long driveway to a second house in the back. When I go down that long driveway, as I approach the house, okay, the air conditioning was on, and I can actually hear somebody in there, and the person was smoking marijuana because the fumes were coming through the ventilation system. So I'm like, okay. So I turn around and I get another unit, you know, back me up. And I told him, okay, I'm going to go around the back. So I go around the back and I find four tall marijuana plants growing back there. Now, this is before, you know, this recent passing of this law. So I go there, I check it out. I touch the soil. The soil is wet, which means cultivation. I go back around the front. We knock on the door. The guy comes out. I explain why we're there. The guy says, you're at the wrong address. That address is for the front house. Oh, okay. I'm at the front house. But meanwhile, okay, do you live here by yourself? Yes, I do. Is that your marijuana plants in the back? We walked around the back. He said, well, yes, they are. I just like marijuana. I even asked the guy, was it for medicinal purposes? I was trying to give the guy, cut the guy every slack. But even though I was in the wrong place, Jamal, okay, and if there's a crime that's being committed, I'm allowed to deal with that. Okay, so there's no penalty for that. Now, going back to your scenario, it's the wrong house. Okay, if they're making an entry, Jamal, and somebody starts shooting at them and they don't know it's the wrong house and somebody is shooting at them, are they supposed to stand there and just take the shots? Okay,
no, I understand that part. I understand the cop did what was in his best interest in terms of he didn't know what was going on, he didn't know it was in the wrong house.
It's an accident.
So that's where it ends. Like, oh, sorry, my bad.
That's not where it's going to end. From a criminal standpoint, Jamal Zeller, you could attest to this. There's no intent factor there, Jamal. There was no intent to go and kill her. However, okay, from a civil litigation standpoint, now if they want to sue them civilly, that's where their recourse is. And I understand the lady died and all of that, okay? But one thing that the general public doesn't understand about these things, they just look at it. She's black. She's in her own home, and they shot and killed her, okay? They don't look at, you know, from a legal standpoint, was it a criminal act by these police officers? The answer is no, okay? It was an inadvertent situation and end of story. But that doesn't stop the family of the victims from being able to sue for what they call wrongful death. Okay, and that's what it'll be. Now, Zeller, I also understand that these people, the family of George Floyd, are now suing the city of Minneapolis along with the four police officers. Now, ultimately, you know what's going to happen. They're going to settle that case, and that means the people, once again, of the city of Minneapolis are going to be responsible financially to pay for that, to pay for whatever that civil judgment is. Where's the money going to come from? The federal government's got no obligation on that. So civilly, it's what's going to happen is that the people, through higher taxes and things of that nature, business taxes, somehow or another, that money's going to be paid. Zeller, do you agree or disagree?
No, I agree. And that's part of the challenge here is that the concern is, you know, what power does the police or the mayor or the city council have to manage the work and the conduct of these police officers? And again, based on the strength of the union, hey, they're able to have an amazingly strong union, which means that they can, you know, get, I think it's at least a third of the officers that are fired for cause are able to go to arbitration and get their positions back. And so
that's the union for you.
Right. And so that's the complication. It's that, you know, that we're the city, you know, citizens of Minneapolis are like, you know, we can't require and force these folks to change the way that they conduct themselves. They do things that are unlawful or they do things that that result in liability to the city. And then we end up having to pay the bill for it. And it's millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Let's move on because I see the time is moving on. Zella, you can stay on because we're going to talk about human zoos. Jamal, you brought this subject up to me one day about human zoos. What's going on with this human zoos thing?
You know, that was one of the most bizarre stories that I've ever, and I think it started in Europe where I believe it was Africa. Either Africa or Europe, where they set up a whole village of African people, African tribe, made a makeshift village, almost like a costume village with a gate around it, where they actually had people lining up to see these people as if they're like elephants in a zoo cage. And, you know, they would do things like taunt them with, you know, bananas and food and things like that. And I mean, it was really sad when I learned about that.
They actually, Jamal, the 1904 World's Fair had over 20 million people that went to the 1904 World's Fair because they even had people, these pygmies from Africa set right up in these situations as an example, going to what you were saying, to be able to come in there and to be able to view them. Now, some of these people actually, believe it or not, they were kidnapped and brought here. That's how they got here, unfortunately. I was looking for that word that we're doing things right now where they kidnap people. I can't think of it off the top of my head right at the moment. But at any rate, so they brought them and put them on display. So the World's Fair in New York, that's exactly right. They did it in New York as well. And these were men, women, and children that were brought to the fair to perform backwards primitive culture for these Americans to see how these people performed or how they lived over there. So when you look at those things, I mean, how demoralizing. This one guy that had been basically captured and brought here, you know, he had been promised that he was going to be sent back, but they kept him in that environment for like 20 years. He finally committed suicide, you know, because he wasn't an object to be put in a zoo, you know.
Right.
And, you know, it's a shame.
I think they even initially lied to him and told him he was going to be a caretaker of animals. And they kind of, that's how they convinced him or persuaded him or brought him over here. And he thought that I'd be okay. But then he realized it was something totally different, that he was actually captured and forced to live under these conditions.
Well, they did the same thing with Filipinos. Filipino villagers were made to perform a seasonal dog eating ritual over and over to shock the audience. A lack of drinking water and appalling sanitary conditions led to rampant dysentery and other illnesses. Two performers died on the fairgrounds that season. Filipinos whose bodies still reside at the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. Others, including kindergartners from Arizona's Pima Indian tribe, were shipped home at the first sign of sickness, which happened after they returned. So it wasn't just African-Americans, so just to be clear, and that's why I wanted to say that. There were other minorities, of course, that were placed in the same situation. And that is shocking, for sure. I think that the Smithsonian, if they still have these bodies of these people, if somebody wants to speak out and say, hey, they need to get rid of that, because that to me is absolutely totally inappropriate. But I want to get on to mass shootings, because Jamal, you still got to do your blast and you got to do your sports news too. But listen to this mass shootings, you guys. This is the 2020 United States mass shooting statistics by month. And let me tell you something. You guys know, I do a lot of public speaking on domestic terrorism and things of that nature. These numbers right here are shocking, and we haven't heard about them truly on the news. One or two of them we've heard about. So listen to this. In the month of January, there were 28 mass shootings. Total number of people killed, 38. 112 wounded. Okay? Next one, February, 28 mass shootings. 37 killed, 91 wounded. March, 26 mass shootings. 27 killed, 112 wounded. April, 27 mass shootings. 23 number killed, 92 wounded. May, 50 mass shootings, 37 killed, 252 wounded. June, 92 mass shootings, 64 killed, 395 wounded. Those totals for this year so far, 260 mass shootings already, 226 killed already, and 1,054 wounded. Now, I've even got a breakdown, but we're running short on time. But I even have a breakdown on the different states. Minnesota is one of them. Minneapolis, okay? A group of people fired into a crowd, killing one and injuring 11 others. Syracuse, New York. Louisiana. Atlanta, Georgia. Cleveland, Ohio. I'm just giving you the largest ones. And Kansas City, Missouri. So, you know, and whether some of these is a result of the rioting and the shooting and things of that nature, because they're mass shootings, remember. A mass shooting is three or more people. But those numbers are still astounding. Now, I haven't done the comparison between last year and this year, so that's what I'm going to be talking about next year, just to see where we are with that. And right now, to update everybody, there are 940 hate groups in this country, which is down from 1,020 last year. They got 940 hate groups. California is still leading the top with 88, Texas with 63, Florida with 67. I mean, once again, those numbers are absolutely astounding. Jamal, give us who you're going to put somebody on blast. Listen to this, Zeller.
Yeah, man. So, I'm going to put Randy Lee Cooper on blast. Randy Lee Cooper, man. Now, he led in Portland, Oregon, he led the police on a high-speed pursuit because he was in a stolen car trying to get away. As he was getting away in this stolen car, he went through an intersection and plowed into another vehicle. So the pursuit stopped in. The police went to go check on the victim, and guess what? The victim was driving a stolen car also. And was found to be under the influence.
What are the chances?
What were the chances? Jamal, what do you got for us? What do you got for us on the sports front?
On the sports piece, July 30th, the NBA will start back up. However, two players have violated the bubble, the campus bubble, where everybody's supposed to stay there and stay safe. One of them was hungry and decided to step out the bubble to get a food delivery. And so he had to be back in the quarantine for 10 days. They quarantine you for 10 days. And he was actually had done 8 out of 10 of the days. So now he has to start back over again.
Well, so, you know what? They also have we'll talk next week about the Washington Redskins, okay? So we'll put that on there and everything that's going over there with that sexual harassment allegation. And baseball, they have some of the key players that are saying they're not going to play. He's supposed to start June 26th. David Price, and I think Price is still playing for the Boston Red Sox. He said he ain't playing. But then, see, David Price has the money. He ain't got to worry about not playing. He's got his cash. All right.
Next man up.
All right, you guys. I want to thank you for being on the show, Zeller.
Thank you.
Jamal, as always, is fantastic. You've been listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts and Jamal Potts on LA Talk Radio. Now it's time to close out the show. Hey, do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Reminding you to be aware, be vigilant, and to be safe. Until next week, everybody, be safe out there.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.